Welcome to the Innovation Calling Podcast,
where we connect creators for the next big thing. We're your hosts, Aaron Greger
and Sia Yasotornrat.
Hey, it's Aaron Greger.
And it's Sia Yasotornrat.
And before we jump into this next episode of Innovation Calling, Sia, what are we inviting him to? We need to make sure you're coming December 11th.
Yes, it is our next Women in Tech Leadership Live podcast recording series. I know it's a long title, Aaron. I see it in your eyes, but it is a good descriptor of what it is, which is a live podcast recording with Vidya Krishnan. She is a Chief Learning Officer and Head of Global Learning and Development at Ericsson. Aaron, I can't tell you how excited I am with Vidya. She's got such a great vision and how she wants to help generate that next generation STEM, employee, if you will. So you guys join us. We do have a great partnership with Ericsson. They have partnered up also with the Girl Scouts of America. So you see lots of all ages.
Yeah. And head over to innovationcalling.com. It'll be once again at our primary studio location. We're going to be able to say that at City Central off of the tollway and about Trinity Mill. So join us December 11th, head over to innovationcalling.com to grab your tickets. So this episode, first, we got to give props to the event Business Beyond the Battlefield. So this is where we had the opportunity to join this event, which is an event focused on helping veterans in business. We just had this amazing opportunity to come and record with some of their speakers and some of their guests. And I have to say, it was an incredible event and really honored to have been there for their inaugural year.
Yes, yes. So Patrick Alcorn is the producer of this event, and I want to give props to him, Aaron, because
yes.
Thank you for your service, but also he just means and knows that there is a life after service. And I don't think all veterans realize the resources available to them.
Yeah.
And so, Beyond the Battlefield, seriously, guys, if you are a veteran and you are looking to start your own business, there's a lot of resources and Patrick can help you out with that.
Yeah. So this was their first year. Next year, they'll be there again. It's November 5th through the 7th in 2020. Head over to bbbc19.com to grab your tickets. So for next year. And they're going to be, I know they're at the lowest absolute price you can get them at. It'll increase over time, just like most events do. So make sure if you're interested in this event, it was in Arlington, Texas, that you grab those tickets. So this guest is one of their speakers. So you can just understand the caliber of their stage. We talked to Jim Murphy, who's also known as Murph. He's the founder and chairman of a company called Afterburner. He was a former F-15 instructor pilot of the U.S. Air Force. And basically what he's done is he's taken the fundamentals, the framework of what they taught in the U.S. Air Force. And basically I loved what he said is, how can these generals sleep at night as they give the missions to these young kids? I mean, they're young kids and they sleep at night, but it's because of the framework they have in place. And he applies this and teaches this to organizations, large Fortune 50 companies, companies like the New York Giants, the football team, have all been able to apply this framework that he teaches and had great success. I loved this conversation.
Absolutely. No, Murph was way, A, gracious. B, you could see the intentionality of all of his experiences. You could see his training background really come into light when he gave his speech. And I'm pretty confident. I think I went through one of his sessions as he was talking. I was like, this sounds awfully familiar, but no, for sure. Anyone that, I think business is a form of, you'd have to have a set of discipline and marching orders that everyone can actually work towards. And, I think him being able to apply military, like you say, framework to the business, it just puts you one leg ahead of the competition.
Yeah. So without further ado, hopefully you enjoy this episode. I know I learned a lot. I know, Sia, you learned a lot. And here is our episode with Jim Murphy, otherwise known as Murph. All right. So we're here at the Business Beyond the Battlefield Conference. We've got Jim Murphy. Jim Murph. I know people call you Murph. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be here. They do call me Murph. Yeah. And that's okay.
Well, I'm a CrossFitter, so please, I'm not going to call you Murph because it's related to the Murph.
Yeah, let's go do it. Yep. Yep.
Yeah, so it's Michael a very extent. Yep. A Murph is it's a huge workout that everybody does on Memorial Day in honor of
Michael Murphy. Yeah.
Michael Murphy. But yeah, it's like if you're in CrossFit, Murph is a bad term. But anyway, well.
We like to think of that as a good term.
It is.
Yeah. So, especially for the folks that take that challenge on, right?
It's, yeah. It is. So it's a mile run before and after, and then in between, I think it's 100 pull-ups, 200 push-ups, 300 squats. And
oh, I've heard of this. Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a no messing around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got it.
And then you celebrate afterwards. So anyway, so you have an extensive background in the military. You're an F-15 pilot and instructor. Can you talk a little bit about your background? I know you came from a farming community. I'm actually a farm girl myself.
Oh, good for you. All right. What kind of farm?
Go Farmers. Dairy.
Dairy, all right.
Yes, dairy in Wisconsin.
I'm glad I was not on a dairy farm. That's too early in the morning.
Okay.
Very regimented, the dairy farm.
Yeah, I mean, I actually, summer vacations were not vacations.
That's right.
We had to actually work more.
That's
so
right.
Can you talk a little bit about your history and going from farmer to pilot and just a little bit about that.
Yeah, so grew up in rural Kentucky, central Kentucky. My dad was actually an entrepreneur, a businessman. He grew up as a salesperson, first selling World Book Encyclopedias door-to-door, then IBM typewriters, and then went on to start his own company. And it was a sales force for copiers and facsimile machines. So my mom was a farmer, but we always lived on farms. And our dinner table discussions were always unique for rural America. And that was my mom would talk about, okay, well, it's going to get cold tonight. So Jimmy, you're going to have to get up real early and break the ice on, make sure that the horses have free water and free up the ice. And then Dad would talk about filling his pipeline and conversion rates and how to drive brand awareness. And so they were great conversations. So I think that helped me a lot later on in life when I dove in to be an entrepreneur. But I was an athlete, and I was fortunate enough to be pretty good in baseball and ended up going to college on a baseball scholarship, played Division I ball, played in the SEC, and assumed and thought and worked really hard to get drafted. Mm-hmm. And when college was over, I didn't get drafted. So it was a big shock to me, my family, and actually the community. And it was a real bummer, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
But I had to go to work. So I went to work for my dad's company, selling copiers door to door to small rural companies throughout Kentucky. And, you know, it was cool. I liked it. It was great training, but I wasn't happy. And I was searching for more. And I met a fighter pilot just by chance. And I met somebody that was living with purpose, doing something not everybody could do. And he just made a huge impression on me.
Yeah.
And I don't come from a family of veterans, but right then I knew that, you know, there is a higher calling, you know, and I wanted to serve. And I got very excited, started researching and started taking flying lessons. And then it's not always easy to get into the pilot training pipeline if you didn't go to the academy or ROTC. And I had been out of college for a year and a half. So I figured out a way to make that happen. And lo and behold, 16 months later, I'm flying the F-15, at the time arguably the most sophisticated jet on earth. And you know, it occurred to me on that day at Luke Air Force Base when I'm climbing up the ladder and getting ready to fly my first mission in the F-15, because there's only one seat in that jet.
Yeah,
I said, gosh, how does a normal guy like me from Shelby County, Kentucky get here in 16 months? Basically went from farm boy to fighter pilot in 16 months. So I went through a human process, performance process that the Air Force had codified over 50 plus years, and that are in other special teams in the Army, Air Force, Navy, that the DOD or these groups don't really talk a lot about the human processes, but they talk a lot about technology and their deployments and people. But I saw a really unique process that I went through. And I thought, man, you know, if I would have had just a little bit of this when I was playing ball or when I was selling copiers, not only would I have met or exceeded my quota every month, but our entire organization would have done better. So I vowed that day after I soloed the F-15 to study that performance process and turn it into a business model. So over the next 7+ years, I became an instructor pilot in the F-15, had a great career. But on the side, I was working on turning what I was learning into a business model or process, which today is known as flawless execution.
That's awesome. You had that much foresight to say, wow, this is really, how did I do this? And to break it down, what were some of the differences that you saw? Like going back and saying, wow, I wish I would have known this or this, like from baseball.
Yeah. So, you know, flawless execution first starts with the end in mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I've found is a lot of companies and a lot of teams talk a lot about the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
Their vision may be a sentence long, but not much about the details of what they really want. So although the entrepreneur, the founder, the leader has a movie that has a lot of detail playing in his or her head, you get really tired of articulating that and repeating that over and over and over again. So at some point you stop doing that and you try to distill things down into really short vision statements. But those really don't give true leader's intent. And what I learned in the military as an F-15 pilot when I was 24 years old, I couldn't believe that there was a bunch of other 20 and 30 year olds, all of us flying these jets.
Yeah.
And our commanders would give us a mission and go get a good night's sleep. And we'd have to fly, you know, halfway across the world. And I always wondered how they slept so well, because I don't know too many entrepreneurs that would turn a mission of that significance over to their team and, you know, not want to kind of monitor it or at least lean in a little
bit. Exactly.
So it occurred to me, it's because when I executed my tactical mission objective today, I also knew the details of the leader's intent. I knew everything about the target area, the whys, the second and third order effects, because what my leaders knew, that as soon as we got in those airplanes and we started flying, everything was going to change.
Yeah.
So even though we had great plans, they were going to have to iterate on it in the moment. And as long as we had our leader's intent in mind with a lot of detail, we could make those decisions. We had that consciousness and we could carry that consciousness forward. I don't see that happening in businesses a lot. And that's what we spend a lot of our time talking to, teaching, and working with, you know, a lot of big tech firms right now.
Yeah.
VMware is one of our biggest clients. And if you look at what tech is trying to do, you know, they're trying to do very similar things. Even selling their products, you know, how do we get into the C-suite of our clients and show them that, you know, maybe our solution is critical to the details of their future, and then work backwards from there.
No, I'm totally thrilled with this.
I know, because he's taking notes over there.
I am taking notes because I want to use it for our own business. Selfishly, if I could just reiterate what you had just said, is it the bottom line is the problem with business is that the employees or the staff or the workforce doesn't understand the leadership's vision, goal, details around it? Is that the fundamental problem?
I don't think all businesses operate like that, but my experience has been what I learned as a fighter pilot and then bringing those experiences into the business world, where we start when we work with our clients is we always ask the question, you know, what is compelling everybody in this organization? What are we aligned to or around? And, you know, I get a lot of question marks. Most companies have a really hard time articulating and defining that, especially if I go two or three echelons down into the company's ranks and start asking those questions. There just is a lack of alignment on what's really important long term. Now, they're very focused on their project or what they're tactically working on, and that's working well, but they're tactically focused. They're not strategically aligned. So enabling a large organization to have the consciousness and the details and forethought that the leaders have, that alignment is critical.
So when you have your sessions and your workshops, is it normally C-suite individuals that you have, and bring to what level down do you invite these folks into the workshop?
That's the way we prefer to do it, but most companies don't have what we call the courage to execute, meaning the leaders may not necessarily want to do it before they may test it or pilot it in certain parts of the organization. And even then, you know, getting into the C-suite is always a challenge. Part of flawless execution is transparency. And there's a thing that we do and that we learned in the military that's critical to our agility, and that's a nameless, rankless debrief. So one of the core tenets to flawless execution is after every iteration or mission, when we land, we debrief in a nameless, rankless environment, because we want to get lessons learned brought forward so we can roll those into another mission immediately and iterate. And when you do that, you stay at the same rate of change or slightly ahead of it, and you win. But it does take transparency to do that. And it takes a psychologically safe environment, a culture, an ethos, if you will. And it takes a while to really cultivate this. And it definitely starts with the leadership.
So I, in my head, and again, I don't have family in military except for my nephew, but I've always thought the military as being hierarchical. So you're telling me what you guys have done is, obviously there's hierarchy in executing, you have to have that plan. But after everything's been said and done, you guys sit in a room together and everyone's equals, and it's a for lack of a better term, a safe space to share what you guys learned.
That's exactly what I'm saying. I know it seems weird, doesn't it? The military's, you know, yeah. I mean, we have a rank, we salute people that have patches on their shoulders, but that's exactly what we do. But I wouldn't say the military does that as a whole. That's what I learned as part of an elite team as a fighter pilot. And it was critical to our mission success. That's why our mission success rate was so high, because we would have these very honest debrief sessions, and they were specific and structured. And we would get to very specific lessons learned that we could then roll into another plan and execute at a much higher level, or communicate to other squadron members and accelerate their experiences if they were learning what we learned today.
Do you have to coach a lot with, continuing using Sia's term, keeping the place safe? Because to me, it seems like it could be easily be, if there's a debrief, finger pointing, who did it, but you've got to keep it in a place where, yes, things went wrong, or maybe things went right, but how do we, instead of saying it's your fault, take, responsibility for everything and move forward? Do you have to work a lot
absolutely.
With companies?
I mean, we try to take the art out of the communication of a debrief mm-hmm. and make it structured so it applies to anybody and everybody, because the most important thing is to make sure we don't fly over somebody's opinion. Yeah. They have to be open and free to speak about successes, but more importantly, and at least in my world as a fighter pilot, errors. Because if we repeat errors, we die, even in training. So it's important to get this stuff out. So we have to get the elephant out of the room, which is rank or superior, I sign your paycheck, or, you know, I'm trying to get ahead in the organization. So this is something that takes time.
Yeah.
And like any great culture, you have to be maniacal about removing those barriers to create a nameless, rankless debrief environment. And then there's a process that we use to peel back the onion, to get down to the root cause analysis, to really figure out not just how an error or success occurred, but why. And what we're really looking for is patterns. And patterns start to develop within teams, because teams have personalities and organizations have cultures. And if you can start identifying a certain pattern, like maybe a lack of communication around standard operating procedures, we can write those procedures, then communicate those and influence not one, but thousands. And this is the not just incremental change, but massive strategic change that you can make by debriefing.
Well, and I know this process. I saw an interview you did. You used it for the New York Giants too, Tom
That's
Coughlin.
Right.
And one of the things that was really important to him was taking the rank out of things. I don't care
That's
if
right.
you're a rookie or if you're a 12-year vet.
That's right.
Doesn't matter when we do this. So I think it's really interesting that you can apply it. It's yes, tech is our clients, but you can apply it across all boards.
Yeah, that was cool. We had a call from the Giants back in 2012 when they won the Super Bowl. And if you remember that year, they weren't having a great year up to their bye week.
It was like the best catch ever, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But we came in about a third way in the season and started working with the team on debriefing. They were having some communication issues with veterans and rookies, especially on the defense at the time. And then, we obviously trained both Eli and Justin Tuck, Eli Manning on the offense and Justin Tuck on the defense, and worked with both teams. But debriefing became part of their cycle. And it wasn't just, on Tuesdays when they're reviewing film, but, even after, different plays and, so they had different times where they were debriefing specific areas that had been challenging to them. It's not our words at Afterburner, but I think it was Coach Coughlin's words. So the main reason they turned their season around, or one of them, was using flawless execution, on a weekly basis. And, we were fortunate enough to get invited to go to that game and celebrate on the field with the families.
That's
and
awesome.
Got a
that's
chance
cool.
to hold the Lombardi Trophy. It was pretty cool.
Oh, is that you I saw?
Yeah.
I'm on your website right now. So what I love is that your staff is all former pilots. So they're already indoctrinated. They understand the process. I mean, how do you curate and how do you bring people on, or what's your process to have people on your team?
Yeah. So Afterburner, we're not just pilots. I mean, we hire what we call elite military professionals. And in my mind, every veteran's elite, but we've defined that. So we have special operators and fighter pilots. But we're looking for, hard charging veterans that not only did great things when they were a veteran, but also then went on to show a keen interest in business. A lot of our folks have, their business school out of the way and other, accolades in business. So we're really looking for that as well in our consultants and our speakers. But we're exclusively hiring veterans, elite military guys. And then, the process to onboard at Afterburner's, I wouldn't say it's proprietary, but we're looking for very specific folks, and there's tryouts and there's multiple interviews, but we've got a cool team. We really like what we're doing.
I love what you guys are doing.
I think it's.
And I just realized you also consulted for Hewlett Packard Enterprise. I used to work there. So with what you were talking about, was this when you guys did the training with HPE? Just not going too much detail. Was it in California or all over? Or
you know, I'm not 100% sure. We do between 200 and 300 events a year. That would be seminars, speaking engagements, workshops, and then we consult. You know, we do some of the same work that, you know, some of the big consulting firms like McKinsey and Deloitte do. So I wasn't involved in the HP work, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, because I haven't been in the company in a couple of years now, but now that I think about it, I'm pretty confident. I must have read some stuff up for you guys, because now that you're talking, I'm like, it makes sense. The torture they gave me. I'm kidding.
Yeah, no, we've gotten around. I mean, you know, we've been in business over 23 years now, and, you know, we worked with almost all of the Fortune 100, you know, almost 35% of the Fortune 500, a couple million people have been through our training. So we have gotten around, that's for sure. So there's a chance that if you worked for any of those logos that you've, you know, maybe attended some of our training.
So I want to get into too, because I know this is a huge one for our audience, is innovation. All right. And one of the things you teach is how to stay ahead. However, there's always, I feel like right now, everybody knows they need to stay ahead. You know, even it doesn't matter your business, you're a technology company, you people are starting to embrace that. However, where I see, I mean, I watched millions of dollars go down a drain at a company just recently because they bought technology that they weren't ready for yet. Mm-hmm. And it's that kind of that jumping the gun. Can you talk about the innovation process that you work with your clients, like helping them stay ahead of the competition? Right. But then is there a balance too, where assessing things with their business so they're not doing too much that they don't even need yet?
Well, I have to admit, I've seen a trend lately where that gap is starting to close because, okay. I mean, the digital transformation is here. People know it, and it's eating everybody's lunches, and I think they get it. But what I learned in the military as a fighter pilot is, unless embracing innovative tactics, techniques, and technology is not part of your strategy and your tactical rhythm, then you are not going to be open. The organization's not going to be open to embrace those things. So it really is a cultural thing. And it does truly start in today's world in the C-suite. So in that is, you know, not just the CIO and the CTO having a separate thought process than the other C-level executives, but you know, to be really honest with any business today, this is so critical to the future. It's now just a, you know, I can't even probably articulate it properly now because it has to be in everybody's forefront in their thought and their planning DNA right now. So, and I don't know, you know, I see that gap closing pretty rapidly right now. It was a big problem, you know, 10 years ago, 12 years ago.
And, yeah.
You know, I spoke at many CIOs, CTO, CSO conferences, but you know, it seems to be, at least in the publicly traded larger enterprises that we work with, that's starting to close. Now, picking the right technology, that's a whole nother ball game. So getting the right partners is critical.
Yeah. How about the process though of just helping them understand the step ahead? I know like through your whole framework, that debriefing helps them figure out how, so it's not just I'm focusing on this, but also future. Can you talk a little bit about how that helps?
Yeah, I think the debrief works for sure. But remember, the debrief follows a pre-planned mission objective that has been briefed and executed. So it's specific to that plan. So certainly those could be technology missions. But I think, you know, this whole thing about embracing the future and change from a technology standpoint really comes down to where you see your industry going.
Mm-hmm.
And are you making the strategic steps 3 years into the future to allow for the budget, the training, and the HR that's going to support that? I mean, unless that's all aligned 3 years from now, you're going to have a hard time making a pivot or a shift in the next 6 months or a year. I mean, these are things that are truly strategic decisions that require that kind of thought process and rigor, and they have to be put on the 24 to 36 month battlefield out ahead of you, because these are really critical decisions that have to be made. And the other thing is, you know, you can see a lot of organizations that are bringing a lot of that in house, and it's very customizable to their own, you know, march down the battlefield.
Yeah,
I just don't see a lot of businesses. I mean, I don't know. I think all enterprise companies need to have that vision of 5-10 years out. But if you think about SMB, you know, small business, applying this, I can see where you can help accelerate growth, but do we really have that level of opportunity to look that far out? Or do you think it has to be shortened a little bit because small businesses, it's a different business altogether, I guess. Help me understand that.
So I would push back on that a little bit in saying that it's really important that we call it an afterburner, the HDD, the high definition destination. We believe there are three levels of execution: organizational, strategic, and tactical. The organizational consciousness that you build for your company, with digital transformation being a big part of that, that can't change a whole lot. I mean, imagine, you know, back in the old days, we're going to set sail from, you know, Europe to the US, or from England to the US. And we plan, we have the provisions, we've got the right ships, the navigators, and we're going to hit Boston Harbor. That's where we're going. That's the destination. So we start sailing, and our king, our queen says, no, 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 why don't you head down to Jacksonville, Florida instead? And, you know, you hit another point and no, we want you to go to Maine now. And, you know, so you can't always be changing that organizational beacon or frame post, if you will. But strategically and tactically, absolutely.
Yeah.
But what I have seen is we used to shoot for a 3 to 5 year HDD. I've seen a lot of companies, especially in the tech space, push it back to 24 months because of the complexity that's going on in the marketplace today.
I mean, there's so much technology evolves so quickly. The pace of technology, I understand it's 24 months, but sometimes I feel like we make too many tactical decisions. And I see that with tech companies as well. So you're saying 24 is about the average you're seeing?
Well, you know, I'm just saying for setting what we call your high definition destination, yeah. And that's where planning starts. That's the principles, the details of the future. Most companies don't do this. Most companies have a general vision. So, you know, we leave it up to our tactical execution to get us strategically down the field, which is the complete opposite. You must start with the details of the future first. Where is the finish line? What does it look like in great detail? And how are we going to celebrate when we cross it financially, branding, market position, innovation, entrepreneurship, human capital, all the different buckets that need to have details in them and agreement upon with principles, guardrails to get us there. Then and only then can we determine what strategic touch points, strategic plans need to be written and executed. And then how do we get them tactically off center?
So I know we've addressed some of this, like we've talked about alignment issues, like really understanding the organization. Are there any other major blaring things that you see? And I know this is a loaded question. I get it. But blaring things that you see organizations really where they're failing in execution, and a lot of times why they're calling you.
I tell you, you know, we see a lot of execution gaps in organizations today, and that's why we're so busy. It really starts with the HDD first. Most companies do not have the details of the future. They do not have a consciousness that carries on throughout an organization. They don't have that force multiplication, that scale. The other thing is a lot of companies don't have a disciplined framework to actually get those missions accomplished in the here and now. They really don't have a planning framework they adhere to. When you ask a company, how do you plan for something? They look fairly inquisitive and go, well, we have to have our plans up for our sales team every September so the CEO can make their deck look good for the following January when we do our launch. But that's the only time we really think about planning. Or planning is just a fractal number. You know, we're shooting for X billion dollars worth of revenue. My division has to do this much of the revenue, and we have to sell this many units. I learned that planning was about action. Actions that drive results, the numbers. So planning has to be about the actions, the things that need to occur in the business to drive the numbers. That's where I see a big failure in companies today. So it's planning the actions with some rigor over a short amount of time so you can get to a debrief so you can iterate and do it all over again.
So I spent 20 years in corporate tech sales, and I can tell you right now how many times I would much more enjoy RQBRs, which is basically debrief, more value to us if we actually had that opportunity with what you're describing.
Right.
Because we're told, sell this, close this, and why don't you pull this in? Yeah. And that would be our QBR. And it would be just literally a no knocking on certain individuals that's listening. But it was literally just, oh, here's the deals that we've got in play. But it was purely tactical. There was no...
So let's don't confuse a QBR with a debrief. In flawless execution, the debrief only occurs after the mission is over. So, and it only addresses a specific mission objective. A QBR is kind of going, hey, let's look at what happened last quarter. So I get a lot of CEOs, I mean, some of them we've read about in Fortune, that call me after a big event has happened and said, Murph, can you fly up to New York immediately and debrief the company on the last quarter's results? It was a tragedy and I've got to get in front of the board again. And I go, absolutely. I'd love to do that. Love to take your money and come up and do a debrief. However, comma, can you please send me the clear, measurable, achievable mission objectives that supported the quarterly results?
Yeah.
Every time, crickets. And I go, you know, I can't come up and debrief the big picture. I have to debrief specific mission objectives that were planned, briefed, and executed and ended. Yeah. I mean, a lot of these things are still free-flowing in flight. So you don't debrief regular work. Policies, procedures, and process does that. We're debriefing specific missions that are accomplishing specific pieces of a strategy that will get you to your HDD.
That's genius. I love this. That makes absolute sense. And it needs to be applied better.
Yeah. Well, I know we're getting close on time. I know you actually have to go speak at this event where we're at. If somebody wanted to learn more about you and you're preaching to the choir right now as you're listening to this, where would you recommend they go?
Well, you can go to afterburner.com. And you can also go to LinkedIn, James D. Murphy, or Flawless Execution. I'd love to connect with your listeners on LinkedIn. We push out a lot of content on LinkedIn. And I'm also part of a new network called GLOW, the Global Leaderships Organization, Global Leadership Organization, sorry. And I'm representing the veteran community. It's a great community-based organization that has communities around tech and retail, but there's also a veteran entrepreneurial space as well that I'm representing. And today I'm doing a speaking engagement in front of the vets here. So we're really excited about that. So if you're an entrepreneur, you're a business person, you're looking to get on your game and like to get in front of some like-minded folks in the tech space, look at GLOW. Check them out.
That's awesome. I don't have any questions. No, it's been a pleasure to meet you, Murph.
Yes, thank you.
Have a great day. Happy hunting.